Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
We have had this conversation a number of times, but we've always had it in shorter bits from between here and Israel. This time, Dr. Ron Schleifer is in studio with us. He's an Israeli expert on information, on psychological warfare, and on military media relations. We wanted to understand how this has played out during this war. Is it a brand new thing? And what can be done about it? Dr. Ron Schleifer, a very, very good morning. Thank you for joining us, and it's nice to see you. How are you?
Thank you very much. Good and glad to be here in person.
How's your trip to South Africa been?
Oh, fantastic. Almost looking around to see where's the catch.
It's called the ANC, the catch. I don't know, but maybe I don't know, in their strange way. Because, I'm just interested to hear, we always try to tell people that there's such a massive difference between being on the ground in South Africa and government.
Right.
But have you felt that as a visitor?
No. Just people are so nice. It's Jews and non-Jews alike. It's unbelievable. I've been around. I've done a few million kilometers and I know about being nice and being really nice and really being care. But people are nice here as a rule, as a basic rule, not just, just an open gesture. It's
right.
People are really nice. People care when they hear that I'm from Israel. They say they jump on the seats. Oh, really? Oh, yeah. It's unbelievable. I don't know who created the split. I mean, I know who created the split, but...
Well, that's probably what we're going to talk about. But yeah, but it is interesting because it's very hard to explain to people when I travel that there is such a chasm between ANC government and people of South Africa. It's very, very distinct.
That is true, but don't forget that I come from the field of propaganda,
okay. And
propaganda can do anything. And I have a vast experience in that, first experiencing as an Israeli citizen,
right.
And I can a vast experience as a researcher and practitioner. You can do anything. I mean, take the Second World War, for example, okay? You have bitter enemies, Germany and Russia and America and Britain, okay? And then the interests change. A day after the Berlin was freed, interests change, and then all of a sudden, Russia is the enemy. How can it
happen?
Be done? The answer, propaganda.
Right. Very interesting.
You can do anything with propaganda.
In other words, we do need to be careful here because even if we do have something beautiful in terms of people, it's not that difficult to change.
Yes. I've seen this in Egypt. I've seen when it was in 79 after the Camp David peace accords with Egypt. And the Egyptian people were out of the way to welcome Israelis and welcome and talk about peace and talk about progress and development and mutual and the Jewish community and all of that. And then within 2 years, the Egyptian interest has changed. Maybe it has always been like that.
Mm.
And then was a massive propaganda campaign. And all Egyptians hate our guts in a split second. And this is what propaganda can do.
Right. So we do need to be careful around that. Let's just talk about how propaganda has been used during this war. And it's something that you and I have spoken about a number of times. But let's just go through it where October the 7th happens.
Yeah.
It is a horror of unexplained magnitude. And yet a day later, there is some sympathy around, but then a day later, before Israel even retaliates, we see marches in support of the victims of Gaza. How did that happen?
Okay, well, the easy answer is anti-Semitism, but that's too easy and is not effective. answer to answer this enormous question.
Right.
I would say Israel in terms is a big thing about. I can stay here day and night to explain why Israeli propaganda is a contradiction in terms. Uh-huh. Okay, we don't deal with that. We prefer to deal with the kinetic side of war and not with the persuasive side of war.
Right.
We are so lagging behind that it's not even it's not behind. We never entered the arena. So it's not like it's not even bringing a knife to a gun the gun battle. We're not there at all. So we don't come to the battle. And the battle is reserved for those who those who are there. And the Arabs have been investing enormous amount of money in order to buy, first of all, the campuses. Campuses are very important because campuses are training the future leadership. And campuses are inserting the philosophical themes which are operating or the operating method of operating mechanism of society. We all have our philosophies and we try to confirm to the great majority. But if you want to change that, you start small, you start with the outcasts, you start with those with the unfortunate, and then you get them together, and then you increase that, especially if you have money. And in the 70s, the process started in the 50s, but the real leap into the propaganda battle started in the 70s. Now it's been found that Saudi Arabia and Qatar and the Emirates and have been investing enormous amounts. We're talking about tens of billions of people, and this is the sums that we know of. Okay, so it's been invested in campuses. The PLO was a cash-hungry organization, and yet whatever money that they had, they got from the Kuwaitis, where they levied the Palestinian workers who went to work in Kuwait. And all it turns out that the international airlines were paying ransom to the PLO for their airplanes not to be hijacked. So they took the money that they get, and what did they do with that? Invested it in propaganda. I met a number of people during my lifetime that said that in the 70s they were visiting Lebanon on a fact-finding mission. When you come, so I'll tell you what the process of Lebanon was. Yeah. The PLO was kicked out of Jordan after it threatened to topple King Hussein's regime, and they were badly butchered, and they ran away to Lebanon. In Lebanon, they immediately went out to control the refugee camps for the 1948 refugees who fled northern Israel to the nearest place, which was Lebanon. And then they would place the Katyusha rockets inside civilian schools and the hospitals, and they would shoot them towards Kiryat Shmona.
Right.
In those days, you could track is where the salvo was coming from, and you shot back.
Right.
And Israel shot back, and naturally killed and wounded a lot civilians. Civilians.
Mm.
And then the media was invited. Now, there's no way you can explain away this image.
So it's so interesting because I was going to say to you, all of this makes make sense to me with regard to a complicit media. In other words, enemies of Israel in the Arab world, I understand it. But how did they win over the media in South Africa, for example, and America, where there's this idea that they hold themselves to a very high standard? But in a way, I'm starting to see how that works.
It's a long-term strategy, mm-hmm. which in the past few decades we see its fruits coming out. The first students to be targeted were the social sciences and the humanities. Mm-hmm. Those who go to university to study philosophy, they have an interest. They are young. They are eager. They are fluent, and often they have the means to survive on campus, because otherwise they'd have gone to be accountants.
They wouldn't be doing that, right. Exactly. They wouldn't be studying.
Or law. Mm. Okay, and these guys and women, they want to change the world, to make the world a better place, all right? So what you have to do now is very simple. You have to show them how to improve the world. And the way to improve the world is to support the oppressed, the Palestinians, and to protest against the might of Israel. Okay, so this is the makeout of a Jeremy Corbyn type of people. Mm. He really wanted to change the world, and he was conscripted. And once you see the result of an Israeli counter fire, there's no way. Or once you tour a refugee camp in Gaza, and you walk through the gutter on the street, and you see the misery, which of the conditions that they live in, you can explain it away 10 times over that this is how the Arab countries are forcing the refugees, and the PLO is threatening with violence and really kills people who dare to leave the camp or take Israeli support in order to improve their life. So they're following the communist mantra, as the worse it's for the people, the better off the revolution. And it works, and it works to this day. So the today's senior journalists were mid-level journalists 20 years ago, and they were beginner journalists, they were students of journalism 30 years ago. Okay, so they really want to make the world a better place. This is why they stayed in the profession. Okay, what all you have to do is just, you know, nudge them a little bit where to. Now the Palestinians have made an enormous novelty in controlling the media force, the international media force. First of all is by whining and dining. And then when Intifada broke out, we had 800 foreign journalists coming to Israel. 800. Well, normally there were only 250.
Right.
Okay, it's more than Washington and more
than
the Kremlin.
Very high concentration.
Yeah, Jews, Jews are news and all that. Okay. And then they came to them, well, you want a story? You want a driver? You want a translator? You want a good story? You want a photo angle? I'll get you. So they got them into all these scenes. And then it became very interesting, where the local population saw the foreign media, they immediately started the demonstration.
Right, right.
All right. So
art mimics life, mimics art, mimics life. And so we got.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
So this, and then was the second stage, when the media was co-opted, where it turns out that it became quite risky. As unlike before, where both sides were quoting the international media, the later PLO and Hamas afterwards took over the situation and replaced the journalists with their own people, crediting under the AP, UP, and all the Reuters and the news agencies. which they said Reuters. It didn't say Salah Abu Ahmed Reuters, because that might have been suspicious. So there's Reuters, okay? And they began the credibility. And gradually they took over their profession, and turned out that they that the Palestinians have organized the journalists according to ideological and political affiliation. You had the PFLP journalist, and you have the Hamas journalist, and you have the PLO journalist. Fatah, and it was a good income. It was a good income, all right. And then agencies said, okay, I mean, why bother with sending out somebody on a full pay and with enormous expense? We have a local, and they supply the material.
It's unbelievable, this.
And this is an operation that took for 30 years. Now, after Arafat is gone and his replacement came and Hamas came in, I mean, you could not, even if you wanted to, you could not deliver anything which was critical of the campaign or the Palestinians. And the journalists who were having some independent thoughts were shown the way. It started in Lebanon in the 80s and then moved to, it's an operation. I wrote a book on that together with Danny Simon, who was the head of the government press office. It was severely criticized for not playing the game with the foreign media. And we show in the book the bribery, the threats, and then what on top of everything, the journalists were angry at Israel for not supporting them. Like an Italian journalist, very critical of Israel, went into Gaza, and then he was giving the treatment of not a favorable one, and then he called Danny Simon, get me out of here. So he says to him, let me get this straight. You are calling me in the middle of the night to get you out of Gaza. Especially, so he shouted at him, stop joking. Take me out of it. I'm in life danger, etc., etc. The idea that we wrote the book for was to show that what happens in Israel doesn't stay in Israel. And this is the situation now in many other places of combat places around the world. The way the same thing that what hasn't stopped in Israel in demonstrations and the way demonstrations are dealt with and civil disobedience, it starts in Israel, but right. It never stops.
So let's just talk about that, because it's almost a different side to it. The media part of it is so interesting because we are seeing very, very similar things here. This groupthink here in South Africa, and examples I'll give you is that the news here will not report on Hezbollah when they were firing rocket after rocket after rocket at Israel. That wasn't reported. But when Israel retaliates, that's reported. So it's filtering just to, and there's absolutely an understanding that they don't criticize Hamas. It's just a thing. And or they will, they'll say, yes, what Hamas did was bad, but it's Netanyahu's fault, but it's everybody else's fault. It's never, ever, ever really blaming Hamas. So there's all of that happening within the media. Civil disobedience, and you've explained this to us before, is about creating a divide in your enemy against each other, because obviously it weakens the enemy. Right. How has that been done?
Okay. Politico, which is a left-wing website, news website, highly credible, did a story about 3 or 4 weeks ago about the Israeli protest movement. Turns out that the strategist behind, who is orchestrating this whole thing, by the way, I say in brackets, strategic consultants are the true leaders of today's world, because they can shape how we think.
Okay.
All right. End of bracket. And what happened was that it turned out that the guy was funded by Qatar. Okay. And then another piece of interesting information is that 2 weeks ago, it came out the fact that the demonstrations, the protest demonstration in Israel, were funded by Qatar to an amount of 160 million shekels. In rand, it'll be like times five. Mm. Okay, so it'll be around 100 million. And this is what has been known. This is just the tip of the iceberg.
So this came from Qatar to Israel?
Yes, yes, to the protest.
Under what guise? You know, what was the... what were they pretending? Because surely they weren't sending in money saying this is to fuel the protests.
Okay, they came to something to with connected to a party of Yesh Atid, okay. Kahol Lavan, and whatever.
Okay.
Okay. So Kahol Lavan is a movement,
yes.
And the principle was invented by the communists in the 1920s. It's called the Front Organization. Okay, and the organization, which has a very good, declaration of intention, but basically its purpose is completely different.
Right.
Okay, so the purpose of many elements, including the Biden administration, which coincided with Qatar's, which coincided with China, coincided with Iran, to topple the Israeli government. Okay, so they did not fund armed demonstrations. What they did fund is democratic protest, and organized it superbly. Because people think naively that the demonstrations where people come out to the streets and shout. And they have no idea what a huge amount of organization it takes in order to do that. People need to be bused, and people need to have a placards, and people need to be taught the slogan and given drums and whistles and trumpets. I live next to Netanyahu in Jerusalem, and every night, the demonstrations which were designed to unsettle Netanyahu by not letting him sleep. They also did not let me sleep, it was trumpets, and it was highly, highly organized. So it cost much more than 100 million rands. It cost, but this is to show you the extent of being of the operation, nature of the operation. But I'm absolutely convinced the 99.9% of the people participating in the demonstration believed that they are doing good.
And that is the power of manipulation.
Exactly.
That is unfortunately all we have time for, because we've got to go to ads before we go to news headlines and the news. Dr. Ron Schleifer, thank you. Absolutely incredible. We could continue doing this for an hour, but unfortunately we are out of time.